Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Welcome to an episode of All That Android, episode 65, recorded Monday, June 24th, 2012. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Eileen Rivera. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Jason Howell. No, I'm Eileen Rivera.
I'm definitely Ron Richards.
Sorry, it felt right to go right into Eileen because you always do the intro, and it would be strange for me to say my name at the top.
Jason, did you always call yourself the third person? It's so strange for Jason.
Howell, whoever that may be. And it was made even just a smidge awkwarder, if that is a real word, because of the Skype lag. So I should remember that next time I try and pull a joke like that. We do have a guest in the studio with us today is Michael Wolfson. He's an Android developer. You might remember him from a few months ago when we had our fan-made apps contest. Michael here created Droid of the Day, which was the app that I chose to feature. But
Thank
of course,
you, again for that.
You created the awesome app, you actually ended up winning the contest.
Woo!
Woo.
Love
so it. Then, so when, let's see here. Let's think about this. So that means that you have an HTC Rhyme.
I do. Thank you. It's an excellent test phone.
My gosh, are you using it?
Not really.
I noticed that you don't have it as your daily phone.
Still using my G9X.
Galaxy Nexus.
I was going to ask you how the dongle was. How's that dongle going for you?
You know, my purse is a little too big, so it didn't come all the way out.
Need to use the dongle necessarily. You just have to make sure that your notifications for Droid of the Day actually blink the dongle when they hit the phone.
Right.
So, yeah, it actually serves a purpose. Today we are going to be talking a lot about things that we expect at Google I.O. It's Google I.O. week, in fact, starting this Wednesday. We're going to talk about the supposed expected Google tablet, jelly beans probably. I wish we had some jelly beans, actually. Plus, there are a ton of new apps released this week. Just a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm psyched. Are you guys pumped?
It's a big week. I literally just got my press invite email for Google I.O. Tell me what I need to look out for and where I can plug my laptop in. So I'm feeling it. I'm excited.
Look out for like muggers and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's down in Soma, so maybe.
Hey, are we gonna sit next to each other at the keynote? Am I gonna find you guys?
I hope so. I don't want to go to a convention and not have any friends.
Yeah, let's form a gang while we're there.
Let's form a gang for the first keynote.
If only we had some sort of devices that could keep us in contact with each other.
Yeah, no, I don't know what you're talking about. That's future talk. That's like flying cars and stuff.
I can't wait.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it too. Let's actually dive into the news and talk more about it. So, as I mentioned, Google I.O. this week starts Wednesday, in fact. There are just a number of sessions. We kind of went over a lot of those sessions a few weeks ago, so we don't need to dive back into them. Although, I do want to ask you, Michael, you've been to I.O. This will be your fourth year, right?
I have been lucky to go 4 years in a row.
So you're like a seasoned vet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there any session in particular or a couple of sessions that you're kind of looking forward to, ones that you're looking forward to going?
So I asked you to add this to the topics because I wanted to address it. There are a lot of really popular sessions. For instance, the Rito Meyer session is going to be packed to the gills. That's, you know, really intense Android talk.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest skipping that one, right? Because you're not going to get very much out of it by attending in person. There's no way you could possibly capture all of that wealth of information. So that's one of maybe my strategies for getting the most out of I.O. is maximizing the attending the sessions that may be more interactive and may be more involved that you can get more out of live.
Right, because all of these are going to be, I imagine, I know they're all streaming live. That's one of the things we wanted to mention is that if you aren't going to be at I.O., you can actually check out all of these sessions online. I think it's developers.google.com/event/IO. And they have a really cool kind of a flash video interactive thing where you can, you know, 1 through 4 based on, you know, which kind of, I don't know what you call them, STEM or I don't know, whichever direction you're going to. But, it, you know, all these simultaneous sessions are happening. You can click through and watch each of them. I imagine that means that they're going to be available after the fact, too, right?
Right. So the point is, you're not going to get much out of that, these intense deep talks sure. when you're live. There's just so much content. You really need to watch them and be able to rewind and fast forward. But there are a lot of soft talks that are much more fun to be at live. For instance, I wanted to give a shout out to Ben Collins Sussman and Ben Collins Sussman and Brian Fitzpatrick. They're giving a talk on the art of organizational manipulation, which is all about how to get things done in a big corporation, which software developers need that skill. Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of things that are just so much fun to be there live and so. So much fun. So just my point is, don't discount the soft topics when you're there, because those are the ones that are maybe more fun to be at live. Mm-hmm. And you're going to spend hours going back and looking over all the really deep educational ones later when you're in front of your computer coding.
So. Absolutely. That's a really good point. Be more strategic about kind of the ones that you really should be there in person for, and maybe have the people that you want to pick their brains a little bit potentially afterwards, because sometimes these kind of these things end and it kind of breaks out a little bit into an opportunity for someone to go up to the person that was talking and really, you know, ask them a few pointed questions on what they were talking about.
Right. And so that's a really good point, because most of the sessions, with some few exceptions, have Q&A at the end of the session. So mm-hmm. if you're particularly interested in maps or some particular component, make sure that you kind of have your questions ready for the end, because most of the time there's time for that.
Yeah. Cool. And that also includes time for you to say, hi, I'm so-and-so with blah, 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 and you've just given a plug. Yay. you hear that a lot, by the way.
Yeah.
Google I.O. is also streaming their keynotes. They've announced Wednesday, June 27th. That's the day after tomorrow, this Wednesday, at 9:30 a.m. is the first keynote. And then the following day, Thursday, June 28th, at 10 a.m.,
They need to sleep in a little bit. Wednesday, the Thursday keynote people.
They got a little bit of.
It's gonna be a bit of partying, I bet, on Wednesday night.
Yeah, so, a little Android hangover.
Yeah, I think so.
Android. Stop. That's right. I'm butting into my own show because I forgot to mention something, and it's very important.
If you go to live.twit.tv on either of the days of the keynotes, that's Wednesday, June 27th at 9:30 a.m. Pacific, and Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific, that's June 28th, you can watch Twit's live special breaking news coverage of the Google keynotes. Leo and Tom are both going to be on hand both days covering all the announcements from the keynote events. So you don't want to miss that. It's live.twit.tv. Definitely check that out. And now I will allow you to watch the rest of All About Android.
I want those Android cookies. I want the cookies.
Oh, I'm sure they're going to do those.
Google TV cookie, all of the branded cookies.
If they have the booth set up that they had at, what was the one in February in Europe? Where was that in Spain?
Oh, Mobile World Congress?
Yeah,
Mobile
Barcelona.
If they have that booth set up with all that candy and food, I'm never leaving it ever.
Going down the slide. I'm going down the slide. I'm telling you right now, if they have that slide.
Well, I hope that they'll do more than Mobile World Congress, right? I mean, this is their big show. Or yeah, I'm hoping that it's just the craziest Android experience.
It's just going to be a smorgasbord of desserts and candy and everything. Like, everywhere I turn, there's going to be ice cream sandwiches.
And they really do put out a lot of food and a lot of candy. There's no conference I've ever been at.
For some reason, I'm not even still quite sure exactly why I missed out on most of those desserts last year. When I finally found out that there were ice cream sandwiches and stuff, I looked at the tray and there were melted remnants of what once were ice cream sandwiches.
Those are the cookies.
Yeah.
Yep. I wonder if those
were they Itzit ice cream sandwiches last year?
I don't know. I didn't have any either. They had.
They should be.
They had tons of different foods, but we missed out on the ice cream sandwiches.
Oh, well. See, who cares about tablets and jelly bean when there's dessert?
I care.
Okay, I care too. I'm just saying dessert's pretty cool.
This is shaping up to be possibly the best conference I've ever attended.
Possibly the most delicious conference you've ever attended.
I can't even tell you. Remember last year? I know we talked about this. You were just jealous, but
yep.
Remember I came back all gooey-eyed and you're like... What? Where did you go? You know, what
well,
kind
I
of,
was jealous. That's why I told yeah, right. you this. I'm awfully jealous of these things. So
you're like,
I
wasn't there.
I can rub it into everyone who can't go.
But, I wasn't there, so I refuse to believe that it was any good.
You're going to be wearing that t-shirt every day. You're going to be in this like Google I.O. glow for the next like month. I know it, Ron. I see it.
Yeah, Ron.
I see it in your future.
I part see you showing up with one of those Android hats with the antennas sticking up.
I'm going full on in. I'm just completely committing to the entire experience. It's going to be excellent. But is there, so I like the fact that we have a veteran. So is there anything else that we need to know? I mean, like, you know, like for a newbie, you know, like, do I need to make sure I get a seat with a power extension? Are you in the same room the whole time? You're moving around. How does it break out?
You're moving around quite a bit, and the sessions fill up really fast. So if there's something in particular that you're very interested in, I would make an effort to get there early. There are sessions that that get closed. If you're not there early enough, they turn you away. So strategize. Use the IO app that really spells out everything.
Absolutely.
And, one of the tricks that I've used is for sessions after lunch. If there's a particular session I want to go to after lunch, you go get the to-go box and then take it upstairs and sit in the room and eat your lunch up there instead of eating
clever,
in the lunchroom.
Clever tip. I like it.
Absolutely.
I'm hoping that the panels that I'm interested in, like mainly Google TV, are lower attended ones. And so I'll be able to sneak in, no problem. Well, let's be honest, you know.
But. Well, should we move on to rumors of what we'll see and what we'll get, maybe?
Well, yeah. So one, just real quick, 1 second. Just a few more quick things here. IO Extended was one thing that you mentioned, which is like part, I guess it's just like global parties around watching IO events and stuff.
So I asked you again to put that in because I'm organized the Google developer group in Phoenix. And one of the things that we do is we put on, not just in Phoenix, but everywhere, we put on these Google I.O. extended events. And these are basically parties where you go to hackerspaces. In Phoenix, we're doing it at Heatsink Labs, which is a hackerspace. You basically watch the simulcast. You hang out with fellow developers. They bring in food, swag at certain places. So if you can't get a ticket, which I know is hard to do, this is still a way to participate in the events all over the world. There's 300 different I.O. extended events. Basically, go watch the keynotes, live watch some of the sessions together, and just hang out with developers.
Like-minded
developers. And that's what this is all about.
For sure. That's great. And finally, before we move on to the rumors, we should at least give you an opportunity because you are actually a part of one of these sessions, right?
Yeah, so this is like the luckiest week I've ever had. I get to be on All About Android, which is really a thrill for me. And there's a session on Friday called Playing with Patterns, which they picked five developers to come up and show their apps. And I think basically they're going to kind of pick apart our UI and tell us all the things we're doing wrong and that we should be doing better, but to demonstrate the things you should be doing better. So,
sure. Well, that could be, seriously, that could be very beneficial to anyone to have that kind of critical analysis. Like on the surface, it sounds like, oh, well, you know, that would suck to like go in and show your app, but you might actually walk away.
With
a lot of valuable insight.
I'm getting the opportunity to get my UI looked at by Android experts. Unfortunately, it's in front of, 1,000 of my peers. So
I respect you for that, man. Stepping up and getting up in front of that audience is that takes a lot of courage. So I'll be rooting for you.
Cool.
And it puts a lot of eyes on your app as a kind of, I don't know, where does it end up after the talk too, which I guess puts a little pressure on you walk away and institute some of the
changes, implement so. These things they're telling you to do in front of 1,000 people.
But ultimately that means better app. So, everybody wins. So.
And that's the point of that. And that's also, I think, a kind of good soft topic that might be appropriate for people that aren't hardcore developers to actually start to learn the patterns and start to understand where the UI paradigms are in Android and what's important.
Absolutely. That's great. Well, Eileen, take it away. We've got some rumors, obviously, about I.O.
I have been waiting for Wednesday for a long time. So one of the biggest rumors out there is that there will be a tablet announced at the keynote, which I hope is Wednesday. I really, really hope that the Android is the first day. So apparently Gizmodo has sort of a I don't know, a scoop on this. It's the Nexus 7. Apparently, this is Google's new Nexus tablet. From Asus, and it's a 7-inch tablet, 1.3 gigahertz quad-core Tegra 3, 1 gig of RAM. There will be an 8 gig version, $199, and a 16 gig for $249. There's NFC with this, Google Wallet, and Android Beam availability. IPS display at 1280 by 800 res. The Kindle Fire is at 1024 by 600, so slightly better. 1.2 megapixel front-facing camera, but no rear-facing camera. And I remember I saw you tweet, Jason, that maybe that was because to lower the costs.
Absolutely.
Supposedly 9 hours of the battery life on this device, and it should be the first to run Jelly Bean, although we don't really know the version number. And supposedly it will be available in July, which is literally 5 days later, and have Chrome pre-installed and only Wi-Fi. I hope all of that is true.
That is a great lineup of specs. That is a nice tablet.
Now I'm wondering if this tablet is sort of the same or similar to the 7-inch tablet that Asus showed off at CES in January. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that was sort of like a little preview of it. And I had read a little bit of, online, like, could Johnny Hsieh of Asus walk out and give kind of like a hello presentation? He's like fantastic on stage. So I really hope if he shows up on stage from Asus, I will be like, yay, do something fun, smile. This is so exciting. So I'm just hearing a lot of things that the presentation is going to be over the top. Now, spoiler, I don't want to get your hopes up too high, but I'm hearing this presentation for the first keynote, at least, is going to be like wham, bam, in your face, like all over the place. So
will there be pyrotechnics and fireworks and dancing girls? And
you know what? I hope there's no dancing girls. Not that. It's just, visually, let's have visual, like beautiful, gorgeous presentation. But, dude, if they do the booth babes, I will be very upset.
Well, I meant more like watch Vegas. I mean, classy. Now, I didn't mean anything, insidious. Classy. Okay. that front-facing camera thing, I think on tablets, rear-facing cameras are not a good thing to have. I think front facing is good because if you're going to Skype and use it for that sort of thing. But I can't stand people taking pictures with their tablets. It's weird. So I'm fine with that. I think this is really interesting.
Like I feel if you have the money to drop on a $500-$600 tablet, sure, have a rear facing camera. You might as well. You're already spending spending the money for a tablet that's maybe a little bit more souped up. You'll probably find that you don't use that camera hardly at all. But I think it's a smart choice. If this is to be believed, it's a very smart choice that Google didn't do the rear facing camera. I think that's a great way to kind of save cost. I never use my camera on this thing. And I mean, I hardly ever use the front facing camera on it, probably because it's not that great. And I don't do much video calling with my tablet, but that at least has some sort of a use, on a regular basis with a tablet, that's larger than your tiny little phone. So.
All the rest of the stats look really great on that tablet. So if that's the only compromise that we have to make, then it's a real winner.
That's not the only compromise, right? Because there is supposedly no SD card slot. So if you get the $200 version, which is kind of like that price point that really grabs your attention, you're getting 8 gigs of storage on a tablet with no expandability.
You see, but I'm not surprised by that, because by making it Wi-Fi only, I feel, and Google's always been about the cloud it's a streaming device. You're not going to, I mean, even though you're traveling and you might want to take it on the plane, you're not going to have more than 5 movies on it or, you're going to put one or 2 movies on to let, I think Google is going to position it as a streaming device, and that then makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think the price points are good. I would have loved for it to be $149, $299. That would have been awesome, but.
You're never satisfied, Ron.
I'm just saying. I mean, like it's just that given, because then that would have been a little more competitive, and it would have been a little more, it would have gotten some Amazon to kind of wake up. But $249 for 16 gig is not bad at all. And also interesting in the photos there to see how the Nexus logo is vertically positioned. It looks like they're meant to hold it like that as opposed to horizontally, mm-hmm. Which I just find that interesting from a design standpoint. But it looks neat.
I can't wait. I think Google. Oh, sorry.
I was just saying, I can't wait to see it in the flesh.
Yeah, I think Google did everything, if this is to be believed, is doing everything right here, partnering up with Asus for the hardware. Asus is known for great tablets. Man, I can't wait to see what they have in store and if this is it. I think it's going to be a big success. I mean, obviously, the big difference here between the Kindle and this is the Nexus branding. Just the fact that you're not running a hugely forked version of Android that's kind of, you know, crippled in many ways, which is kind of what the Kindle Fire is. So I think it's a no-brainer.
Really interesting. So, but the Nexus gave us a little more information as well about Jelly Bean. I know we were wondering and rumoring whether there was going to be a new version of Android to be discussed at I/O, and sure enough, the leaked Nexus 7 document also, and I hate to use this pun, but spilled the beans about Jelly Bean. And an interesting thing for that is that that Nexus 7 document said that Google will be handling operating system updates from now on. And so that opened up the door to wild speculation as to, is this just for the Nexus tablets or for all Nexus devices, all Google devices, all Android devices?
All devices running Jelly Bean? Like, what does that mean?
A big question, big question. Yeah. But furthermore, a whole bunch of other leaks about Jelly Bean started to come out. And some of these are a little shaky and some of them are a little more, you know, kind of solid. But so Google's listing its HSPA plus Galaxy Nexus is the first phone to get Android 4.1. So that was that came out. Also,
hey, Ron, I kind of looked into that today and it looks like the phone that they're listing that as is the one that's available from the Play Store. So, and right. That is actually different than the even the GeneX that's international.
Wow.
So that's a little bit.
And I don't even know if that's up anymore. I think it was pulled pretty quickly. But
somebody got a screenshot and they got it.
Absolutely.
So we see that confirmed 4.1 as the version number. Also, Google Checkout, if you looked very closely, you could see the new search widget, which everybody was running around crazy about this in the blogs, but I'm like, it's just the front end thing. But yeah, so you get a glimpse at the new Google search widget, and a lot of people are speculating if that's the first kind of publicly spotted screenshot from Jelly Bean, which might very well be. But,
yeah, like not the most significant thing in the world, but because it's a first of any kind, then people are like, oh, well, that's evidence of what we're, you know, going to expect out of Jelly Bean. That's a pretty insignificant low level change there, if it is.
And then the last big rumor that was circulating was that they might be revamping the Google Play Store to support Jelly Bean. So I don't know. This one's a little shaky. You know, whether or not we'll see, you know, I haven't seen a lot of proof of this other than the screenshot, which looks somewhat questionable. So,
yeah, it looks kind of iffy to me. Like, it looks like such a step backwards from the last redesign. I don't know. It almost looks like they're going closer to what the old version was like. And I don't know. I just don't buy this one as much, but. Yeah, I guess anything.
We do expect changes to the Play Store, just like they're they release new versions of software at Google I/O. They there's a couple sessions on Wednesday or Thursday. So we do expect changes. Whether it'll be that drastic or not, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think about it? I mean, I realize this is just a screenshot. What they're trying to go for, what supposedly here, is to make it a little bit more unified with what you see when you go to the Play Store on the web, which I guess that's kind of similar. Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I do like from it, like the majority of the screenshot I don't like. I don't like the carousel on the top. I don't like the listing of the apps like that. But along the bottom, the little icons of whether it's music or books or video or whatever, I think that's pretty good. I think the current Play Store app isn't anything to be proud of. So I'm glad that they're iterating it and they'll get it right sooner or later.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I mean that middle section, that what's hot, and even the carousel looks a lot like an older version, but those bottom icons, I think that's worth running with in terms of, you know, associating with the aspects of the Play Store online.
Sure. Well, that's I/O in a nutshell. That's Jelly Bean in a nutshell. That just made my brain explode.
That was, you're mixing your desserts.
I'm mixing my my bar food with my desserts. Okay, so just really quick here, because there is a little bit of other news, and then we'll move on to the rest of the show. That Apple Motorola patent case that a few weeks back seemed to be on the ropes, with presiding Judge Richard Posner stating a dysfunctional patent system as cause for dismissing the case, actually ended up going forward in court. Judge Posner, if you recall, had doubts, but but ultimately decided otherwise, and the case was seen. Now, skip forward to last Friday, when after hearing both sides of the case, Judge Posner issued his final decision. Both parties' cases were dismissed with prejudice, meaning neither side can refile on these issues. Posner used the opportunity to reiterate that patents in the field of information technology often have little, if any, value except defensively, and pointed out that injunction against Motorola would have likely resulted in costs that far outweighed any potential loss or gain to either party. So this kind of came along as well as, you know, what we talked about in a previous episode, Oracle's loss to Google regarding the Java code in Android. It almost kind of, in a strange, small way, feels like the tide is changing a little bit in favor of Android when it comes to kind of these patent cases. I don't know if it's
and
just
software patents in general.
Yeah,
right?
Software patents
we've
in
seen
general.
Some good
right.
trends mm-hmm. away from these companies suing each other, and hopefully that's a chapter we can put to rest someday.
Someday. I don't know if it'll ever be put completely to rest, but to see some of these judges kind of pointing out and making a point to come out and say, all right, this is kind of ridiculous. Obviously, we have to do this, you know, when these cases come along. But, I mean, Judge Posner said a lot of really good things about kind of what everybody kind of feels about the patent system right now. So notable for that alone. Let's take an email. Ron, go.
Well, I was going to say before, you know, Jason's back on the show when we're doing patent stories. So welcome back, Jason.
Thanks. I'm sorry.
We missed you. All right. We got an email from Ivy, who wrote in saying, hello, I was trying to set up my Skype on my Asus TF-101, and apparently it won't work on that tablet. Can you recommend another video chat or talk program that will work on the E-pad? I would like to hook up by video and talk to my daughter in Orlando. I'm a couple hundred miles away in North Florida. Love video chatting, and that's a great use of a tablet. Looked into it, and some forums say that Skype should work on your tablet for video. To enable, you got to go into the settings and enable video calls, set it to high quality, and then once the call connects, tap the screen and then tap the video camera with the slash through it, and that will enable the camera so you can start using it. But also, we saw some posts saying that the video quality was pretty poor. So if you can't get Skype to work, Gtalk, the native Google chat client, handles video, handles it great, especially on the tablet. Also, there's an app called Uvu, which is OOVOO, which is supposedly a good alternative. I know a lot of folks use that on the web. I haven't used it on the tablet.
Yeah, I haven't used it either.
Your mileage may vary. But also, you might want to look into Google Hangouts. If you and your daughter both have Google accounts and are on Google Plus, the new Google Hangouts and through the Google Plus app, you can utilize video chat that way. So a couple of different options. Thanks for writing in, Ivy. Good luck. Let us know how it works out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's strange. Up until very recently, Skype video, I guess, didn't work on the Asus Transformer. I just would have assumed that Skype works on most devices, especially one that was so successful as that one. Speaking of hardware, let's jump into hardware. All right.
I got this one. So a couple weeks ago, I saw a post here about Sharp, and they have sort of a new sexy skin, a new UI on some Japanese handsets. Let's see a little bit of that video. What's most impressive to me is the lock screen. A new kind of Android experience is what they're calling it. And now some of the UI itself in terms of the apps and the squares and whatnot, you know, I can do without. But me personally, I love that there's a lot of activity that you could do on the lock screen. I think we're starting to see some of that right now. We're moving the bottom right-hand corner. We're moving. We're switching from time to weather to,
stocks.
You know, yeah, stocks to playback of your audio, all on the, you know, to forward, rewind, all on your lock screen. They claim it's very simple to understand. I don't know. What do you guys think? Some of this stuff I could do without. Some of the contact stuff, not so much. I really don't like the squares here, the apps, the way it looks like that. But I want to take that lock screen and use it. That's what I want off this.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the squares, but like the more functionality on the lock screen, at what point do you just unlock the phone?
Well, I mean,
like, isn't the point of a lock screen to keep things. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's
information,
funny.
Information, time, and, you know, well, I don't know if you follow stocks. And I like to, you know, if I swipe a couple times and if I'm listening to music and I just hit, you know, skip, pause or something like that, I don't have to go in and double tap and open up, you know, wake up the entire phone. That I like.
Yeah, I like the idea. Yeah. I like the idea of launching stuff from the lock screen. Like when you unlock it, it launches the camera or something like that, or making the lock screen a bit more intuitive. I like the design of it a lot. Actually, the design of that lock screen is great. I'm not a big fan of the boxes either, like you said. But I just think it's funny where you make a more functional lock screen. At what point is it just the screen? That's my question.
And then you got to be careful of security, that kind of stuff. So you know, on top of that lock screen, you probably have to have some kind of security. So. You know, there's only so much you can go. I mean, you just have to try it to see if you really like it. But I'm glad people are kind of innovating, and that's the beauty of Android, that you can.
I mean, and that's an overall, like, skin change a la, you know, Sense or whatever. It's a completely new type of skin. Just having seen what you've seen from that video, where do you think it falls as far as skins are concerned? I realize part of that is just playing around with it and everything. It's a pretty nice looking skin as far as skins go, right?
Some people are saying it's very Windows-y.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I don't know. I haven't played a lot with a Windows phone to really know, but if I like it or not. But I'm open to kind of changing things around. I get kind of bored with my launchers and whatnot. I'm happy to. That's what I love, that we can actually customize. Mm-hmm. So bring it on, Sharp. Give me an app.
Yeah, right. We realize you're doing this to sell your handsets, but just give us the app.
Yeah, can we just have the app? I don't really want your phone. Sorry.
Well, you probably won't see that here anyway. Supposedly, it's just in Japan for right now. I mean, it would be hard to think that eventually it wouldn't come over here if Sharp starts selling a lot of phones in the U.S., but I guess that remains to be seen. Ron, Google TV stuff.
Yes, so one of the biggest complaints about Google TV has been that it's pretty much a domestic product, only available here in North America. But finally, the first Google TV device is going to be available in the UK. Sony announced that the NSZGS7 internet player, a Google TV set-top box, shipping next month to the UK for $199. And there's also a $299 Blu-ray player with the integrated Google TV called the NSGP9, which will launch in the holidays, availability through in US, Canada, Australia, UK, France, Germany, and the Netherlands. So this is basically Sony's strategy of moving to a Apple TV Roku box-esque device. And now making it available internationally. And I find it curious that they're still going to keep the Blu-ray player going, which makes me happy because I like my Blu-ray player and I might upgrade because I want that new remote. So it sounds like this holidays we can see a new Blu-ray player coming out from Sony. So that's interesting. But now our friends in the UK and France and Germany and Netherlands will be able to play with Google TV just as much as I do and love it as much as I do.
That's a big deal because I feel like anytime we talked about Google TV on the show, we always get, you know, at least a handful of people writing in like, yeah, but, you know, these features are great, but how about making it available to the rest of the world? Like, just do that, Google. In a lot of Google products, that's the case. And Michael, do you have Google TV?
I do have Google TV. I like Check Review.
Oh, okay.
Which I love. But it's a little long in the tooth. I'm looking forward to this device. I wish they came up with a little better name for it.
I know.
NJ6L39. but it looks like a sexy device. It looks like it's got pretty good power and good storage and all those things that the Logitech Review maybe didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
But although I find the Logitech Review perfectly capable for everything I need, I love it.
Well, and I don't necessarily disagree with Sony's strategy of moving to a box. I think that's a great idea. I like the Blu-ray player because it's functional and that makes sense. I have no problem with them phasing out the integrated TVs. I think a software shell like this integrated to a TV is bad for TVs. Personally, I believe TVs should be like just dumb monitors and then let me add boxes to it to make it smart. Mm-hmm. So I think that's fine. I mean, I was worried that they were going to phase out the Blu-ray player, but I'm glad to hear that they're keeping that. So, but yeah. So yeah. It's a good device.
Cool. Well, one more piece of hardware news here. The U.S. launch of the ASUS Transformer Pad Infinity, set for July 16th. It features a high-res 10.1-inch Super IPS Plus display with 1900 by 1200 resolution. That's at 224 points per inch, so that's a pretty good pixel density. NVIDIA quad-core 1.6 gigahertz Tegra 3 chipset, 1 gig of RAM. Wi-Fi versions are launching on July 16th, as I said. In the U.S., it's $499 for the 32-gig version, $599 for the 64-gig version, and an LTE version is in the works. That would, of course, have the Qualcomm dual-core Snapdragon S4 chipset to work with the LTE radio. So ASUS rolling out some more fancy, you know, hardware. They're really good when it comes to these tablets, and they have quite the following. I think this was actually kind of hit the news today, so saw a lot of people buzzing about this.
That guy in the video is really excited.
What's that?
That guy in the video is really excited to play with his tablet.
Yeah, he's cozy in his home with the trees behind him, and then you know.
What I like to see technology. he had to double up his grip because whatever he was doing was so exciting.
Look, Ron, he just got this. All right, shipped to him. He just opened the package, so
he's like, "Whoa, look at that!
It's an amazing display. I can hardly see the pixels."
I'm excited. I get to see one of these tomorrow, so I'm super excited.
Really? To
see the display and whatnot. Yeah. So I'll let you guys know what I think next.
Yes, take notes, and next Monday we'll definitely have to talk about that.
The question is it worth 2.5 times the 7-inch
right.
price? I got great specs. It's mm-hmm. really beautiful, but price point wise, now that looks like a very expensive device mm-hmm. at $500.
I'm wondering
how much the LTE version is going to cost too. Oof, probably, you know, another $100 more than the price points that we see here.
I mean that's a really good question. You know, is the Nexus 7 meant to compete with these tablets? You know, a tablet that costs $500 to $600 and you know is possibly built with better parts and has that rear-facing camera and stuff. They're reaching different people, right?
Yeah, this is more media consumption. This is a gaming device. It's 32 gigs. This is 64 gigs. You know, the Nexus devices are 8 and 16. Not even close. I mean, if you're a digital hoarder like me, you might want something bigger like this, or at least the specs-wise in terms of storage and whatnot. I mean, you saw that video. They're pimping out the games like they did with the Prime. I don't think you're going to get much mileage out of that on the Nexus device. So this is for, I don't know, more hardcore users, I guess, mm-hmm. is what I'm thinking. We'll see.
All right. Well, Android in the Wild, this seems to be this thing that happened while I was
so
gone.
Excited.
And I'm so excited.
I can't take off. Can I just say thank you to everyone? And I have only gone through the Twitter at replies, and there's a ton of emails that I want to kind of cull together. And this is a running thing that we're doing. And you guys are so great out there. Let's show one of them, Chad, from Carlos. There's a few Galaxy Notes in the Wild. No, we're not going to apps. So there's a few Galaxy Notes in the Wild. Some of these are really funny. What do we got going on here? This was a photo. I don't think this is the note, though. Is it?
This is the guy next to him pulled out a note, and I guess he got it.
Right.
So it's interesting because we're looking at all these. I also love these. I love the fact that Android and Wild is taking off. And to give you a hint on how we'll show yours, the more voyeuristic, the better.
Oh yeah!
Like if a friend of yours has a Galaxy Note, them holding it, no, okay, that's fine because that's posed. We want you to go undercover and get that picture of that girl across the aisle on the subway or that guy over the shoulder at the library. Like that's what we're looking for. So mm-hmm. at least that's what else do we got?
What else do we got, Chad? Because my connection.
This one is great.
Yes, at the gym with an arrow in the hand and. Pound Android in the Wild, white Samsung Note unicorn. Love it. Love it. That guy wins. Another winner. What else do we have here? We have, on the train in London. That's right. A Samsung Note. Look at this guy. He's like draped. Look at his color coordinated suit. And in there, he's got the Galaxy Note. but we got to show the watch. We got to show the watch, don't we? Oh, wait. What's this? Oh, right. Oh, wait. Where are you going, Chad?
See, over the shoulder, just another note.
Over the shoulder. These are awesome. All of you guys who are doing these sort of spy cam photos, I love it.
So slightly creepy. Let's show
the watch. Slightly creepy, yeah, but that's what we all are. I'm like, wait a minute. Is someone this is a unicorn right here. Talk about a unicorn. Is this really the watch? And
it are is. We in, and it's,
so look,
and it's,
we're
and
in a cafe too. So it's not like you're at the Sony store and you just happen to put it on your wristband. You know what I mean?
It's worn by a Starbucks barista too.
Oh my gosh.
Look at that, because he's in the apron. In this particular case, having the barista show you the watch and take a picture of it, totally acceptable because it's a unicorn. So there you go.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then one last one. It's a video. And again, all of you guys, we got a ton of submissions. I am so excited. You guys are just in there with it. If you go to Google I.O., that doesn't count because we're all going to have Android phones. Unless there's a Sony watch at Google I.O. That's not part of the display. But let's take a look at this last video. I don't know if you have that queued up. And there's a famous person who is who has just won the NBA championship, Mr. LeBron James. And if you watch, you see someone taking video, and he's taking video of someone, and he has an HTC X.
1X.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, did I drop out when I said
1X? Yeah, I dropped out a little bit. That's okay. We got it.
Look at that. In the wild.
Very cool.
I'm so excited. So pound Android or hashtag Android in the wild. And I'm gonna do a little more cultivating of this. Maybe I'll make a little Tumblr page or something with this.
That's a good idea. That's a great idea. Yeah, or a Squarespace page.
Page and put that all in there, and that way we could just kind of revel in all of this.
So we can track who uses what out in the world of celebrity.
Well, that and just, you know, some of the newer phones that are out there, who's going to get them and when and why.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for doing that. That's great. LeBron, who knew? He's not using an iPhone. What's going on there? It seems like all the celebrities use iPhones. It's what you always see.
A big Samsung Galaxy S3 party. A launch party like a couple days ago, and I saw a ton of celebrities, because I follow them, tweeting about the Samsung Galaxy S3 launch party with X Band, and they were having fun and this and that. So we'll see if they all get one and use one. But they're pimping, you know, Androids out there.
Yeah, you know, Robert underscore has a good point in the chat room when he says, "Are you sure he wasn't paid to have it?" Which I guess
is totally
a very good point.
Totally. And they're giving that swag, and they're giving all stuff, but who cares? Fine.
So at the end of that parade, he like, you know, goes in the back room. He's like, right in the trash. All right. Anyway.
Just opens another.
I did what I needed to do. All right. Let's move into the apps. All right. So some cool developer stuff happening, and I'm sure you can attest to some of this stuff, Michael. First of all, top developers are now allowed to respond to Google Play app reviews. So if someone posts something bad or good in the review section of their app, a developer can actually go in and reply to it. Kind of reminded me of something you might see on Yelp when you go in and somebody gives a bad review to a restaurant, and then the owner of the restaurant comes on and says, "Oh, I'm happy that you wrote in." Kind of similar approach. Kind of a bummer that not every developer can do this. Why do you think they're doing that?
I think that they did that for a few reasons. I think some of the bigger companies have customer service groups that handle these things, so they're more comfortable that they'll be able to do it right. I think the worry is that these discussions could go into trolldom, right? Someone, says bad stuff, and it just goes back and forth.
Right.
I think it's really wonderful. I'd love to get my hands on it as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
These things roll out, I think, in time. We'll all have it.
Start it there and then learn what they're going to learn and move on. What were you going to say, Ron?
Yeah, no, I was first curious if Mike had access to it. But then I think that's a good point that not every developer is equipped to handle. We talked about this before. Is equipped to handle customer service in an appropriate manner. So and Google tend, you know, they tend to test things and try things out. So hopefully they start rolling it out. Maybe they do some sort of certification or something like that. But nothing's worse than having a company with an online presence and leave a comment and they make one response and they never follow up or anything like that. So, you know, maybe they're vetting them, the company, you know, developers that who could do that, that have like either get satisfaction or something like that, that they say, okay, they're committed to these kind of responses, then they'll roll it out. So.
Yeah, I think maybe the top developers too, their apps are just better, so the there won't be as much, you know, just trolling, you know.
Yep. Right. And also, I mean, this is a great opportunity for developers, and I'm sure that maybe you could talk to this a little bit. It seems like I feel like even in my habits in the past, and not recently because I try not to do this, but I'd rate something early on in my use, I'd use it, be excited about it, be not so excited about it, rate it, give a little comment or whatever. Rarely do you remember to go back in and make any sort of adjustment. And a lot of times, you know, the apps are improved and they roll out an update that totally addresses your complaint. And so the awesome thing to do for the developer of that app would be to go in and change your rating. But I think a lot of times people forget to do that. This might be one good way for developers to kind of nudge and say, hey, we've addressed that problem. You know, hopefully the user gets some sort of notification or something on their
end. So the user is emailed when the developer responds to their comments.
That's great.
Cool. That's good.
And I believe there's only one exchange. It doesn't go back and forth. It's just a comment, a response, and then that's
it. And that will minimize the trolling. I mean, that's the kind of thing.
Then there's not the back and forth. They say, if you do have more comments, then take it offline, you know. Mm-hmm. But at least at that point, I could say, hey, email me and we'll talk about this and figure out your problem.
Sure. Well, that's great. Cool. Well, they're also doing some other things. They've actually completely revamped the developer's site. They're adding, well, this article from Android Police says that they're not so subtly nudging developers to the on-screen menu button by the way that they've actually laid out the site in general. But they've really kind of cleaned it up, brought in some, you know, some areas on kind of like distribution of your app and just kind of continually adding tools that are just a good support for developers, I think.
The that menu button thing, I actually had an interesting exchange with a friend of mine who bought the HTC One X from Sprint or whatever they're calling it, the Evo, whatever they're calling it. And he had never had ice cream sandwich before. So we're at dinner and we're comparing our phones and I'm showing him ice cream sandwich stuff. And he's like, there's no menu button? There's no menu anymore? I'm like, well, no, there is, but it's integrated in the app. And I started showing him and I realized the inconsistency. I'm like, on this app, it's up in the upper right-hand corner. On this app, it's in the lower right-hand corner. On this one, it's over here, and I realized, like, wow, this menu button's a mess already. Mm-hmm. That's been one that they really got to wrangle.
So the developer site's been around for a while, and they released maybe 3 months ago all the design. Maybe it was with ice cream sandwich. Anyway, mm-hmm. They released the design stuff a couple months ago, and it really addresses all those sort of things, Ron, in very, very, very big detail. All your fonts, any sort of interactions on the UI itself. It's such a comprehensive design document, and it establishes the language of Android, and they use all the elements of ICS to demonstrate the different features that they're going after. Mm-hmm. It's must reading for designers in particular. It's not,
well, sure, but it's only if they're going to use it and adhere to it. I mean, like, for example, like, do you really think Instagram is going to change their app to adhere to this?
Right. And that's the difference between Android and you know, iPhone enforces some of these things, and Android can only suggest them.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, exactly. So I mean, unless and this is where, you know, I don't necessarily think they should enforce and say you have to do this or not, because I like allowing developers to be creative and change things. But, you know, I mean, I saw it in the case of a total normal user, not like one of us, not a developer, not somebody with kind of background, legitimately confused, didn't know where to look on each app. And so you wonder what kind of design things need to be consistent and what ones are open to interpretation. So,
I have to imagine that corrects itself over time because of what Google is doing right now and has been doing recently. Maybe the apps that, you know, like Instagram has such a kind of history in the design choices that they made for iOS that they're probably not likely to necessarily make it an ice cream sandwich looking app, you know, with holo layout and all that kind of stuff. But new apps that are being developed by new developers on Android, they're obviously going to turn to these resources and follow them, hopefully, well, definitely closer than they would have if they didn't exist at all. They at least have a starting point. So obviously that's a great thing.
Cool. So I feel like I'm on the international beat this week for some reason, but Amazon launched the International App Store, which could be another good step forward for the Amazon Kindle abroad. But also it made some updates, some key updates to those distribution terms. So basically now the App Store is available outside the U.S., so developers from the U.K., Germany, France, Italy, and Spain can submit applications. Amazon says it's going to add more countries in the near future. Amazon UK site slash the App Store page for that is still not live yet, but I'm sure that'll be live soon. Amazon says it has tens of thousands of apps, and Jim Adkins, the VP of Amazon App Store, says that some developers have doubled their revenue since in-app purchasing was created, which is interesting. They've also, you know, that's going to make the test drive functionality available, which I think is really cool. And this really wonders that now that they've, you know, rolled out the App Store, does this mean the Kindle Fire will get a release soon? In terms of the developer terms, it's interesting to see that the terms for developers are better now. 70-30 split revenue share for apps, regardless of whether they're paid apps or free selling content via in-app purchases. So paid apps used to have the two levels of commission, either 70% of the app sales or 20% of the list price, whichever was greater. So they just made it super simple, just 70-30 rev share split down the middle. So this is good for Amazon. I mean, I definitely think they're seeding the water for a Kindle Fire international release. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. That's great. Love to see, you know, that's obviously that's good for developers that are in the Amazon app store.
Especially
been wanting
that. Revenue split, which was really confusing before with the different tiers. And I think developers ended up getting the short end of the stick a lot on the way that Amazon priced the apps. So that's going to help a lot.
Amazon tends to be confusing with that. I work with them in some other areas as well, not just apps, but also in the publishing and stuff like that. They have some wacky algorithms going on with their rev shares. And like when you look at Apple, like say what you will about Apple, 70-30 just makes sense. You know, like they take their 30%, you take 70 no matter what else is going on. So,
well, that's pretty much industry standard. That's play market too. So now at least Amazon's consistent with that, which is really good.
Good.
Yep.
All right, Eileen, a few notable apps out.
All right, I'm going to do a laundry list. Here we go. Flipboard for Android is now out officially. If you don't have it, go get it. And it is available for free. I'm loving Flipboard. Of course, if you buy the Samsung Galaxy S3, you get it. You get it with the device pre-installed. I love the widget, by the way, for the Flipboard app. SwiftKey 3 releases. It's free to owners of SwiftKey. Is it 10 or X? Do we say X? For SwiftKey X? And $1.99 for limited use. So I already have SwiftKey. So I just seriously just downloaded SwiftKey 3 right now. I was about to install it because I cannot stand the Samsung keyboard predictive text on this. I've been using sort of the stock on this while I've been reviewing this phone. And I'm, oh, the keyboard is the worst. I can't stand it. There's also a new, so now if you're not a SwiftKey fan, there is a new beta version of Swipe with a complete overhaul. I'm not quite sure of all the specs for the overhaul. Have any of you guys downloaded the new Swipe yet? I know we were kind of talking pre-show.
I haven't downloaded it, but what their big feature is for this is that they're rolling in the predictive stuff like SwiftKey has. So now they're going to you can use your Twitter accounts, Facebook accounts to learn your your language and things.
Interesting. And then TiVo releases an Android app. So if you have a TiVo, you can, you know, control everything on your phone or your tablet, and that should be handy for you. And one thing that we didn't mention just before we leave our notable app releases, and I don't think we mentioned it at the top of the show, Google I.O. has an app as well, and that'll be really, really helpful for you, saving sessions and knowing what time certain keynotes are and all that good stuff. And there's actually a stream tab, so you could see anybody who's posting on G+ doing, you know, pound I.O. 12 or pound IO 2012. There's a big stream here, and I've been kind of monitoring it sort of obsessively because I'm waiting to hear, like, what is Wednesday's keynote, you know, and that kind of thing. So it's all here on the new Google IO app, which is pretty cool. They had one last year, and they have one again. There's a map as well. So if there's a particular session that you want to, just hit the track, and then it'll show you on the map and all that good stuff. So download that. One's also for free.
Cool. I will get that. I need to remember to put that on my phone again. God, I can't wait for IO. Really looking forward to it. Let's take a look at one more email here from Tobias Svart. I'm sure I mispronounced that last name there.
Right, Tobias. I would have done the same thing, too.
It's really enjoying your show all the way from Sweden. Just wanted to give you a tip about a web page that really helps to explore the beauty of Android. It's called mycolorscreen.com. People put their home screens there, and you can really see the variety and the adjustability that comes with Android. This isn't actually just limited to Android. There's iOS screens up there as well. There may be others. But you can kind of limit it to just Android screens. And it's really interesting. I was kind of poking through here, and you know, you can take a look at a screen that you like, and they'll break it down as far as like, all right, this is a widget, you know, installed here. Here's where you can get this whatever desktop image from like DeviantArt. You know, a lot of artists post their art up there, and you can find it over there. They just kind of show you the lock screen and the desktop. That one in particular that you have up, Chad, was one that I was looking at. And yeah, it just kind of breaks it down for you. It doesn't give you all the settings on exactly how they created it, but it gives you a kind of a head start as far as just also just kind of apps that when you look at these screens, you're like, oh, that's a really cool looking app. And, you know, it's very easy to find that app for yourself now. So I spent quite a while on this over the weekend, just like looking at things and getting really inspired and everything. And then when I actually tried to set out to recreate some on my phone, man, that was a...
I was going to say, you get inspired. I get just sad because they're better than me.
I know. It's not easy. This is not easy. And I realize, like, when you... There are ways to theme your phone, especially if you're rooted and you have something like CyanogenMod. They have, you know, kind of theming built into it, so it takes a little bit of the guesswork out. But, man, some of these people, they're talented at this stuff because they create it from the ground up, and they obviously have a mind for this stuff, and that's a mind that I just don't have. But it's pretty cool stuff to pick through and get inspired by.
I like inspiration is the good angle to take. I'm going to go with that. I like that.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it might give you a few options, even if you can't recreate them as much as you might want to. So thank you, Tobias, for sending that in. Mycolorscreen.com is the URL for that. All right, without further ado, let's jump into the arena.
To enter, one lives. Android Arena.
Arena. Boom. This was a true to enter one wins battle.
I know we talked about that. Okay. Yeah, it was like finally we actually matched our our intro.
Our intro for like the first time ever. And Eileen, I gotta say, your song kick choice, that was on my list. I was gonna do that one, and you beat me to it. But Ron's app Rounds comes out with a victory, 60%.
The little app that could. I was all ready. I win. I was all ready to concede a loss to Eileen with Songkick. That's a good app. But shockingly, 60% of you noticed the simple functionality of Rounds and selected it. So thank you. So congratulations to the developers of Rounds. I know they were the ones who emailed me about it. So they did a good job on that app. So Tech Ace, what's our in the chat room? What's the breakdown? Here we go. So we are now, Eileen, you and I are tied with 6 wins each, and Jason is still in the lead with 7 wins. So
looking to make it.
Coming from behind. Like, I've been down these past couple of weeks, but I caught up. So,
well, yeah, you're on a little bit of a roll there, Ron. I got to say, I hope that it ends here because I have a game that just might take you back. Some of you back to your childhood. And, you know, I don't always do games, but this one I found myself playing a lot over the weekend. I actually really like it. Atari, of all companies, released Centipede Origins. And this is a Centipede throwback game with updated kind of modernized graphics. It has a – it definitely – okay, so it's 99 cents, and it has an in-app kind of – purchasing mechanism to it. And if you go onto the Play Store and check out the comments for this, you'll see a lot of people kind of upset with that. They're like, but I bought the app. Why do I have to buy for more things? The thing about it is you don't have to buy anything in the app. It's, I mean, if that purchasing option wasn't there, you'd still play the entire app and you just earn it by playing it a lot. So you could still do that. So don't feel like you have to buy it. It should be noted, though, that it's very easy to buy something within the app. So it's probably not the best thing to have for your kids if you don't have some other app installed to kind of lock them out of making an inadvertent purchase on the game. But now that I've got all that out of the way, to fend off the naysayers of this game, I'll just go right into it and kind of show you a little bit of the gameplay. And I don't know if I have the music up. We'll go ahead and go into Bumpkin Batch Gardens. So you have kind of your typical approach where as you earn more money by playing the game, you have the ability to buy boosts, which are kind of like, you know, ways to improve the shots that you do, add two or three kind of arrows instead of one, that type of thing. Or you can add gadgets, which do things like a fly trap where it installs a fly trap on the field, and then as the little centipede runs across it, it actually goes out and snaps them. So you can kind of buy those from the screen here. I'll put that up there. I'll get Time Warp. I've never even used Time Warp actually yet. I think I just earned that, and I'll play. There's a little bit, like one of my complaints about it is that there's definitely a little bit of wait time as it loads these things. I don't know if there's really a whole lot you can do around that. You know, it gives you these animations and stuff that you have to wait through. But once you're going, you just grab this little button down at the bottom, and it's typical centipede gameplay with a few, you know, extra pieces of accoutrement. You know, you just pick up the coins to allow you to buy extra things. There's all different types. It's really hard to play this sideways. There's all different types of of enemies that travel down. There's the typical one that you're seeing right now that just kind of goes back and forth and runs into the mushrooms. There's the ones that drop straight down and drop a constant line of mushrooms behind them, like this guy over here. Ah, and I just died by him. Sorry. So, you know, it's pretty straightforward, but it's good just kind of arcade action. And it really kind of took me back to the centipede that I know and love. It's, you know, improved graphics. If what you like are lots of colors and, you know, kind of splashier graphics. I also actually really like the old school graphics and the simple gameplay, too. But it's nice to know that I can load this up on my phone or my tablet and just kind of kill time and everything. I'll show you what I mean by in-app purchases, by the way. Down here, there's a little row where you can buy potions and coins. You can actually buy coins to be spent on upgrades and stuff. So three times experience multiplier. So for every experience point, you get three times of it. That would be like $2. And that goes all the way up to, this is wishful thinking on Atari's part, $99.99 for a pack of 750,000 coins. I would love to know who that person is that ends up buying that. I'm sure one person will. But you don't have to, so that's my point. But anyways, it's Centipede Origins. It's just a pretty straightforward throwback to, you know, what Atari used to do really well in these kind of old school arcade games. Just have a lot of fun with it when I'm not playing it sideways. It's really frustrating to play sideways, to be honest. But that is that. Do I have any centipede lovers in the house?
I grew up with centipedes.
I love centipedes.
So.
Okay.
Well, I like the old version.
No.
Shut up, Ron.
I do too. I was afraid of this one, but it looks good.
It would be cool if they allowed you to like pop into 80s version.
Oh, that would be. Maybe maybe that's a secret level, but I doubt it.
I mean, it's dangerous whenever you get into this modern updating of an old classic, but it looks kind of fun. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the way I figured it was 99 cents. Atari doesn't really come up with a whole lot, you know, stuff these days. And I don't know, just for the nostalgia aspect of it, I was like, I can do 99 cents for this. And I actually ended up playing it a lot more than I think I thought I was going to. So
I hate when that happens.
Yeah. It still has the classic gameplay. It may look different, but it's
exactly. Totally. And it has a dramatic soundtrack. but anyways, that's it. Atari's Centipede Origins, 99 cents in the Google Play Store. Check it out and get addicted. That's my app. Okay. Eileen.
I am next. So a lot of you know that I have been really down on Twitter apps on Android. I'm just not happy with many of them. And since I've been a part of the 7%, right, with ICS, I've been playing around with an app called Boyd for Twitter, B-O-I-D for Twitter, and it's free in the Android, in the Google Play Store, Boyd for Twitter pre-beta. They call it the beautiful and simple Android 4.0 Twitter client by Team Boyd. I want to just let you guys know that there are six contributors. Everyone on the team is a teenager in school, with one exception. One guy is 21 and moving into a career in web design. So these guys are Aiden, Phil, Graham, who I've been corresponding with, Joe, Steve, and Fede. Okay, so just want to give them a little shout out. That's Team Boyd for you. And I think that they have started and created a pretty elegant Twitter client from the ground up. I've watched it evolve. It's gotten better and better as they have added more features to the device. And you'll see that they really go with the holo design, and there's columns, and then you just kind of swipe from left to right. You'll have your main timeline, your at replies when you swipe to the left, and then swipe to the left again is your direct DMs. And then there's trends, and then you can even add more columns, whatever you want. You can add another timeline, some more mentions, other saved searches. If you make lists on Twitter, you can add that. And then you can have multiple accounts on this one Twitter client, which I really like because I have more than one Twitter account that I update. You can actually mute. You can mute, so you could just kind of type in, you know, your key search word or whatnot that you want to mute, which is very cool. I like having the mute feature on here. Right now it's only available for those of us using Ice Cream Sandwich, but the next update, they're going to make it available for Android 2.3. They're also going to have push notifications, and they're going to have they have image preview in the timeline when you open up, if someone tweets out a link to an image. It's not perfect. It doesn't open up as great as it probably should, or give you a really cool clear shot of the image. But they're going to fix that in future releases because it kind of crops out. Like I'm looking at an Instagram photo right now and it crops the picture just a little bit. I think they're going to make it full. So they're going to have better image handling. And a couple things that I wanted, I Twitter stalk, so I like to see at replies of various people that I follow. So I asked them for that button. They said, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe we'll do that. But overall, I've been really impressed with this small little crew to put out a really kind of a competent Twitter app. The appearance, you can change the appearance. You can, give it a light theme or a combo light dark theme and whatnot. But overall, I mean, you know, it could be a little buggy in a beta that they have here, but it has served me pretty well. And I've been kind of going back between this and TweakDeck. I know you like TweakDeck, TweakDeck, right? Jason, you use that one?
I don't use it anymore, but I had used it for quite a while. Yeah,
so I go back and forth between these, but I've been using Boyd a little bit more lately. I just, you know, to me, it's very elegant, and it's a really nice, it gives me the option to RT if I want to. I like that. I think they've done a really good job with their Twitter app. So I'm always on the hunt for something really cool, but kudos to Team Boyd for coming out with this Ice Cream Sandwich app that will be available for many of you other who are not Ice Cream Sandwich users very, very, very soon. So
It's a nice design. I know what you mean. Like, it's definitely, they say it's pre-beta, and I've definitely seen a few things where you go into something and this top bar up here like disappears. I think even while I've been playing around with it just now, that happens. I mean, I'm able to get it back, but just little things like that. But the overall design of it is just really clean and nice. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Good job, you guys. Team Boyd. I think they're in the UK too. So give them some love. If you don't vote for me, give them some love. Download.
Boyd for Twitter. That's B-O-I-D for Twitter. And that is free in the store, Play Store. All right, Michael, you are up.
All right. So the first thing I want to mention about my demo is when I started the show, I turned my phone to airplane mode so that I wouldn't get any tweets or my phone wouldn't go off in the middle of the talk.
Thanks.
Cool thing is, then the important reason that's important is this app runs completely offline. So the app I am recommending is World Travel Guide by Tripozo. I think you really can search for Tripozo in the market. I do a lot of traveling all over for fun and for work, and I love to have I love to travel, love to learn about places I'm going, but I also just love to learn about different places. I have always had like the CIA World Factbook on my phone, which, you know, tells you all about different countries and all those sort of different things. So anyway, my app is basically a travel guide for Android. And it's pretty simple and pretty clear what it does. And it's completely free. There's no ads, no charge to download it, anything. Basically, what you do is they have a list of tons of guides for all different countries, big, small, all sorts of different cities. The first thing you'll do is you'll go download a guide to your device, and that those guides generally run about 50 to 100 megabytes. But once you do that, all the information is down on your phone. So again, I'm offline. I don't have any internet mode. And we'll just go ahead and look at like the United States travel guide. So it presents some cool little pictures on the top, and then it provides a bunch of different information on destinations, on different information on just the culture, food, just general country information. And of course, you can also then go in and you can look at different cities that you want to go to and find specific restaurants that might be good in a city, or information on where to stay, all those things. The cool thing is it's all offline. So this is a great thing to have on the train, or if you're on the airplane, or the really cool thing is if you are going to one of the places I would hope to go to someday is Iceland. So I downloaded the Iceland app to, you know, learn all about I'm not even going to try to pronounce Reykjavik, which I did try.
That's right.
Cool. You know, if you were in Iceland, obviously you probably wouldn't have internet connection, but you could still have these travel guides on your device. The information's all gathered from open source repositories. So they use Wikipedia for some things, Wikimaps. It's all using OpenStreetMaps is the mapping engine. So I don't think I showed that. But if you do want to look at map-specific stuff, all the maps are offline.
That's nice.
And, you know, have all the different information based on the map. So I just think it's a really cool little travel guide that you can use offline and to just learn about all these different things. It's really nice and easy to use. One of the big downfalls of the app is the information isn't always the most current or great, because they are using the open source locations. And there's no real way to fix the information in the app. They suggest you go to the website of the open source source
mm-hmm.
to update them. But overall, it's just a really nicely polished app. It works really fast. It has tons of great information, and it's just a really neat way to, for free, have all sorts of travel information at your fingertips.
That's awesome. Having that all offline, I mean, is kind of the key there.
Yeah, I really think that's the key to the app.
Being able to load just, you know, you're going to a country or a particular place, load it all on, and that's, you know, the worst case scenario, you always have that. So right. That's awesome. That's World Travel Guide by Tripozo, and that is free. Dang, that's a contender right there. they all are so far.
I would just mention one thing about that. They have also, and I think this is against the Play Market rules, but they have Tripozo Barcelona, Tripozo Spain. They've got hundreds and hundreds of lists of apps by Tripozo in the market. Really, you want World Travel Guide, which is the one that allows you to download everything else. I'm not sure if, you know, Barcelona or those other travel guides are only Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
They may be the exact same app that just is listed differently, which would be against the play market rules. But
right.
Anyway, what you want is this main one that allows you to get all of the different countries.
Okay, cool. Awesome. World Travel Guide by Tripozo. All right, Ron, this is your follow-up. Going for a four.
Tripozo, that's a good app. I wish I had found that one. So this is a tough one. But anyway, but I did find a good one. So any of you who've seen me dress or see me any of my web design stuff, you realize I have a horrible sense of color. For some reason, there's some people who just get it and know what colors go well with other ones and complementary colors and things like that. I'm not one of those people. So when I saw this app available on the Google Play Store, I jumped all over it. It is called Real Colors Lite. And Real Colors, there's a light version and a paid version. The paid version is $4.99. The light version is clearly free. And what Real Colors is it's basically a color palette generator. So if you are a web designer or any sort of designer, interior decorator, any sort of thing that needs colors, this app is really cool. What you can do is you can take a picture or pull a photo from your gallery. So you can load pictures from your computer to your gallery if you want to import pictures or whatever. And then Real Colors will analyze that photo and then give you a color palette based off the colors in that photo. So it gives you a sense of what colors to play with. Talk about cool. It just basically can uses some fancy, I don't know, I'm not a developer, fancy algorithm that goes through and pulls out the color values. And then just easily gives you the colors for you to see. So you can see here, Jason's got it here. He's already made one, but you can just go from taking a photo or picking from the gallery. He's going to take a photo here. And it will analyze that photo, and it should pick up a little bit of the browns. It'll probably pick up white from that flashpoint and all that sort of stuff. And there you go. And there you see what I find really cool is that whole spectrum analysis of the color values down at the bottom and how, where you see the, what colors it's pulling out. It kind of gives you a sense of the percentage of colors present in the photo you're choosing from. And above it, you get the five colors that it suggests as that color palette. From there, you can save it, you can share it, you can send out that color palette, you can send out a sample of it, you can take note of all the various full information about the color values, whether they're hex or RGB values. So you can go over to Photoshop and start using it. You can save previous color palettes. So it's really, really kind of neat when you think about how important color is from design, from a design standpoint. And it's also in the pro version, it's got a neat wallpaper generator, which is what you're seeing there. So if you pay the $4.99, you can get a little wallpaper generator. But what's even more interesting is that not only can it do that color algorithm stuff, but this is all ICS design based. So you see the menu button in the upper right hand corner, and it's all using the ice cream sandwich kind of design standpoint. If you're a web designer or any sort of visual designer, and if you have trouble with color schemes, this is a great little tool to help you do that. So
this is cool. Yeah, no, I like it a lot because I've done this so many times I have a Squarespace site and, a lot of, it's very easy to kind of go in there and kind of, tweak the colors on there. But starting from scratch, I had no idea where to go as far as like matching colors that looked good together. And ultimately my site is very bland as a result of that. But sites like these, like I've gone onto websites that do something similar to this and spent a lot of time kind of looking through just different color palettes that were stored there that, were voted up and stuff. That's a whole world that I just don't understand. Like my mind doesn't work like that.
What's interesting is that you can choose if you buy the pro version, the $4.99, which is a little pricey, $5. But if you're a developer, $5, you expense it to work, or, if you're a designer, you can do that sort of thing. And not only can you create wallpapers, and I was looking into it. I'm like, listen, $5 isn't enough for wallpapers, but the pro version allows you to, utilize color theory and apply different rules to the color palette that is generated. So you can do a complementary color palette or a monochromatic or a analogous or shades I don't even know color theory. So I'm reading these off their Google Play page, but triad or tetrad and split complementary. So if you are a designer and color theorist, those probably mean things to you. And you'll want the pro version or you want the full $4.99 version. So
cool. So that is called Real Colors, free version, as well as $4.99 for the pro version. That is it for this week's apps. We have Centipede Origins, Boyd for Twitter, World Travel Guide by Tripozo, and Real Colors. You can vote for your favorite app this week by going to bit.ly/AAA65poll. bit.ly/AAA65poll. And let us know what you think. Which is your favorite app of the ones we've discussed this week? It's always nice to see the early returns popping in there right now.
Tripozo is running away. It appears that Tripozo is taking off.
Ooh, Real Colors suddenly tied. Yeah, there we go. Real Colors. Yeah, those are... I wonder if
Tech Ace can go back through the do we have a streak? Who's had the longest streak so far? I love the statistics of the arena. I'm sorry.
Well, these are great apps, and it'll be interesting to see where this lands for next week's episode, which I'm really looking forward to, because next week's episode, we're going to kind of know what Google I.O. had in store for us. So that'll be exciting.
We should make the arena only apps that we saw at Google I.O.
That's a great idea. Either apps that we saw there or apps that were announced there or something along those lines, because they always have that kind of like app row on one of the floors where you can kind of go to a bunch of different devices and play with them. Let's do that. Okay. That's a great idea. That's awesome. Each of us will pick an app that we see there, and that'll be the one that we champion. So fantastic app or fantastic idea. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been awesome having you on.
It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. This is absolutely your time to pimp out whatever you want. We appreciate you being on the show, so take this opportunity to
I don't know if I need to pimp Droid of the Day anymore, but please go download that app. I would love it. The other thing is I have a book that's in pre-production right now on O'Reilly called Mastering the Android Developer Tools. So that should be released close to the end of the summer. So if you're a developer and you want to learn about Android Developer Tools, it's available now for pre-order in the Amazon bookstore.
Right on. That's great. That's awesome. Is that book going to end up in the Google Play Store as well? Or
I don't know. It's kind of O'Reilly does that sort of thing. I don't know. I just want to get it done, and then I'll worry about actually putting it out somewhere.
I can understand. That's probably quite an undertaking right there. That's great. That's great. Congratulations. Well, awesome. I guess I'll throw it to you, Ron. Go ahead and plug away.
Sure, yeah. Just if you like me, go to about.me/RonXO and you got links to all my Google+, Twitter, Facebook, all that fun stuff. You find my day job stuff at iFanboy and Graphically. And if you are at Google I.O. and you see us, come say hello.
Absolutely.
Do not be afraid to approach us or anything like that. We want to meet people. So if you're at Google I.O., definitely come say hi and give us a high five.
Good point. Yes, let us know. We're going to be there all 3 days between the three of us.
Yep.
Some of us will only be there a couple of those days, but between the three of us, we will definitely be represented.
Yeah, I will be there. I will be there all day Wednesday. I might pop out on Thursday to go down to Rev3 and do some coverage with them. Mm-hmm. And then Friday, I'll be there in the morning. So
you'll probably want to be there Thursday morning if you have the opportunity.
Yeah, no, I will be. I'm not missing that for the world.
In particular, that's the Google TV day, I think.
Yeah. Do you think they'll probably have the Euro Cup game on a Google TV somewhere at the right? That's at 11:45.
You can probably use their Wi-Fi and stream it.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So actually, that's playing Germany. I just got to watch it. So
that's one thing I wanted to mention too. I'm here representing Google Developer Group. We have a lounge on the second floor of Google I/O. It's basically really easy to find. We've got big screen TVs in there. It's actually right next to the Google TV area. So there's couches. TVs, we're going to be streaming from the different I/O extended events, and we'll also play, there'll be soccer on the TVs, everything. So come visit us at the Google Developer Group Lounge and come learn about how to get involved in your local community.
Oh, right on. That's great. We will definitely use your couches.
I will be there. Yes, I will use your couch.
Please do. You're welcome.
Right on. Thank you again, Michael. All right, Eileen, go.
Oh, just find me on about.me/Eileen Rose or find me on Twitter because I'm using my Boyd app to reply to you guys at Eileen TV. That's it.
That's it. And you can find me on Twitter at Jason Howell or about.me/Jason Howell for all of the options if you so choose. But that is it for this week. Another fantastic episode of All About Android is done. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA, and let us know what you think about anything Android. Email and video mail, if you include the link in your email, can be sent to AAA at twit.tv. You can find the show on Twitter. We are at Android Show. Show notes can always be found at twit.tv/AAA. And finally, you can catch us live every Monday night at 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. And be a part of the chat room. It's always a really active Android enthusiast chat room, and it's always a lot of fun. So check it out. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye. And thank you to Chad for always being awesome. You are a great technical director on the show.